大量に寄り添ったカップを巻かればまた暗渠に落ちていくよだ。何か見える何か響いてる
Poodle time once again. Better believe it. You better believe it. Poodle believers everywhere.
Hashtag poodle.
Hashtag poodle. We are rated the number one poodle cast on all platforms in which we are streaming.
That is honestly correct.
It's been an incredible journey to get here, but I can't think of anyone more deserving than us.
We are number infinite one. There has to be something above one where this podcast should stand.
Yeah, like it's like zero, but we somehow we transcend math and numbers. Really,
mm-hmm.
Really,
that's maybe a little bit reality too. Honestly,
I mean, I like to think that we are regularly transcend reality. I think that's just a thing that we regularly do.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means in the context of this conversation, but when you say it, it sounds really deep, like you're saying some real substantial shit, which is not the case. But welcome to another installment of TOAD, Totally Open Anime Discussion. Of course, the meter is still going. And there's one final bit of business for us to wrap up here with Odd Taxi. Today we are going to be discussing the audio drama, which was released weekly in tandem with the anime's original broadcast. So an episode of the anime would go up and an episode of this here audio drama would go up. But first, before we do that, I think we came into this whole thing to get you into anime. And it's like, hey, let's introduce you to this wild, wonderful world of Japanese cartoons. And we finished Odd Taxi, and you kind of went on your own little journey, unprompted. You kind of started doing your own things. Why don't you tell us about how Anime Land has been treating you?
Well, we'll get to the bluebird in a bit, but
we'll get to drowning in bowls of tears for days.
Holy shit, that one hit me so hard. But something much, much lighter.
It's almost like these should have been watched in reverse.
Seriously. Oh my god, but I really enjoyed Odd Taxi. Like, it's one of the best things I've watched. Like, yeah. I can't honestly, like, not say that, because it's, like, not much sticks in my brain, but this has, like, not left. I was even going back, I've been watching the dub again.
Yeah, like, you're rewatching the show, and now you're watching it dubbed!
Which is pretty good. Odakawa, you're pretty good. You got a bit of the, you got a little bit of, like, the grumble, like, mm-hmm. That's not in like the Japanese voice actors Odakawa, but when I first heard Odakawa, when he had that snark, mm-hmm. I was sold. That voice was perfect.
Absolutely.
But regardless of that, talking about the other anime that we talked about.
Yeah, you went on your own anime journey after we finished Odd Taxi.
Did I watched Bocchi the Rock.
That is a great second show to get into.
It really was. I was, again, when I first saw it on the anime list, I was like, okay, this looks like something like I wouldn't think too deeply about. But after I started watching it, man, they really hit some heavy notes in these shows, even though Bocchi is so funny.
It's
really funny.
It's such a lighthearted show that you can enjoy on the surface level, but then you start kind of looking at what it's doing on a deeper level, and it's like, oh, they're really saying a lot here about friendship and social anxiety and coming out of your own shell and, like, coming into your own self as a person. Like, I think that mm-hmm. show does an amazing job of showing off those things while also just being ridiculous. ridiculously funny.
It is unbelievably funny. Like, Kit said in your Discord, holy shit, that beach scene, like, left me reeling. Oh my god, spoilers if you haven't watched Bocchi, but Bocchi, like, spoilers. Bocchi literally explodes.
She just she pops like a balloon.
It's like she was just so there. She was so anxious that her only response is that she just blew up.
And I love that they carry on with the gag, like with them carrying her off. And she's still deflated. It's
or when she turns into like a plague and it starts affecting everyone else and they text Rio, you're on your own. I just died laughing, but genuinely,
yeah, it's genuinely laugh out loud hilarious. Oh god, yeah, absolutely, yeah,
like character building and how much they care for each other and the little thing. I'm a sucker for little things. Bad text, fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Bocchi's really good too. Just like the subtle looks that they have towards each other, how they carry each other. Mm-hmm. Like Kid Aura is adorable and funny and true, but it's also she's just so fucking charismatic that everybody loves her.
Yeah, like how do you not?
Yeah, and like it's perfect for your lead singer too. Like, since everybody's gonna be focused on them anyways, like oozing that aura all over the place. The fantastic show. I really, really enjoyed Bocchi the Rock a lot. It was a really good follow up to this because this one I loved it to death as well, but it's a little heavier than old Bocchi, especially that last episode.
Woo! Yeah, man.
Killer. Holy moly.
Odakawa was passed. Just digging into that was raw.
That one still gives me shivers. Yeah. I can't wait to get there with the dub. But Liz and the Bluebird.
Yeah, this was one where we watched it as a community. We watched Liz and a Bluebird because people have been bothering me to watch this for like 2 years. Now, Polly, watch it. Polly, watch it. It's really good. I'll get to it. And then it's just like, oh, cool. Here's like 90 whole minutes of pining.
Yeah, pining in the like strongest, most, you just can't cross the bridge and say something sense. And it just keeps you there, and holy shit,
like the whole like the contrast of like the storybook Bluebird story with what was going on, and then when you realize in the real story that's happening, like who the Bluebird really is, it's like oh, it's so good. It's such a great story, but it'll play with your emotions if you ain't ready for it.
Yeah, I may have a little, you know, depression about then. And a little, you know, anxiety myself and brain issues. And that hit me really hard.
Yeah.
That hit me really hard. So I had to take a break for a few. I even had to delay this, unfortunately. For a week, because I couldn't do it last week. I was so out of it.
Like, that's too much. I've been emotionally devastated by a cartoon. Thanks.
I love a cat. I love a cartoon.
That's it. All it is. And anime fans used to get so mad at me because I refused to call it anime. I always just called it Japanese cartoons. And people,
cartoons?
Japanese cartoons, and people would get so mad.
That's wild. I mean, that's literally what it is.
It's literally just all it is.
It's an art style. Like, it's a Japanese cartoon.
That's all it is, dude. Like, people get all up their ass about anime online, and it's still funny because it's just like, dude, you are literally sitting here getting angry on the internet about a cartoon. It's anime. It ain't that deep. Yeah. Calling it anime doesn't make it more than anything else, dude. Yeah. It's a cartoon. And I love and respect animation. Don't get me wrong. But it's very funny to call it cartoons.
Yes, I mean, of course, the little jab is hilarious if you thing about it. But also, like, it is a cartoon, it but, like, cartoon. Cartoons can impact you emotionally.
Exactly. Exactly.
You watched them growing up, I guarantee there's a cartoon that made you
feel something.
Feel very emotional. Mm-hmm. Yes, those are good things.
Maybe
those
even
are,
one
that's
that,
good writing.
Maybe even one that turned you into a furry later in life. Who knows? I know a lot that went that route. And that's not me throwing shade. That's just like, oh, you watched Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers and got thoughts about the girl mouse, didn't you?
I mean, when you make... They had to know.
Somebody, look, I'm of the firm belief that I think that artists in these positions draw their kinks. I think
yes.
I think that especially these days. I think these days people putting their kinks in their work more than ever. Hey, I cannot tell you the number of times I am watching an anime and I can go, that animator's into feet.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, for sure. Oh my god.
So so we watched Liz and the Bluebird, and you watched Bocchi the Rock. And again, maybe you should have watched those in reverse order.
I was totally fine. I was excited to watch a movie. I'm like, my mm-hmm. first anime movie is Community. I'm like, I'm excited for this. To watch it.
Wrecked.
3 minutes in, I'm
oh
laying
my God.
On my chair.
It's
and, like,
literally 3 minutes into.
It is. It is. And I'm just laying on my chair. Well, I'm going to be a mess for this whole fucking movie now. It's real. It's honestly, yeah. I know it's very emotional, but it's honestly really good.
It's
it has incredible animation.
Breathtaking the, piece of work.
Yeah.
Kyoto Animation
oh, yeah.
is top shelf. Like they
You're
just
saying.
They don't mess around. Like you go look at their works like this, Violet Evergarden, which is on Netflix if you're ever curious.
Oh.
The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya is probably one of their most famous works. They did K-On! Too, but I think K-On! Is ass garbage, so and I'll say that loud and proud with my whole ass chest that I hate K-On! Come at me, K-On! Fans. You're not a music anime. You're not a music anime. Go watch Bocchi the Rock.
Music Japanese cartoon.
Music
solid.
Japanese cartoon. You ain't a music Japanese cartoon. Go watch Bocchi the Rock. Go watch Bang Dream. It's my go. Those are
go
way
watch
better.
Those musical animes. I'm just gonna stir the pot as much
yeah!
as possible now.
But we're gonna be doing another movie. We're gonna be doing a watch along this weekend. We're gonna be watching Satoshi Kon's directorial feature directorial debut, Perfect oh. Blue, which is a wonderful psychological horror movie that's in line. May I don't think that it's gonna leave you a sobbing mess by the end.
I certainly hope not.
But it's been fun watching you kind of get into things and I can only assume that the anime adventure is going to continue. I've seen you kind of show more interest in things and it's been fun watching that happen. So it'll be interesting to see kind of like where you go from here, like what you end up diving into and checking out and things of that nature. So that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's what I kind of grown to appreciate the most out of this process, of course, hanging out mm-hmm. and doing these podcasts.
Sure.
But learning something new in my life, really. Like, I've, of course, watched animes in the past. Mm-hmm. I've not ever looked for such things as kind of something just to watch at night. Like I'm always like a movie person, or I'll throw on YouTube or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this gives me something more to kind of dive into, and with anime, especially since I like the subs. I yeah. think I like the subs more
yeah.
than the dubs in general. It makes me pay attention because you have to actually read what's happening because yep. I don't know anything they're actually saying. I know Nani.
Nani?
But it depends on where that's in the sentence and what they're referring to. And I'm just like, okay, I can't just listen to this, as I've learned yesterday when I went to turn on
this is cool.
the audio drama.
Okay, so. Okay. You were let's get this story in, too. This is fun. So you were going to review the audio drama because we're going to go over it for this podcast specifically. But what did you do?
So I opened it. I finished up for the night. I was playing a game with a friend, and I'm like, okay, I'm popping it open. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna start playing it. I turned it on, and I went to the bathroom, and
a startling realization.
I don't speak English, so I didn't understand anything that was happening.
I think you just did a dyslexia there and said you don't speak English.
I don't think I do. I just speak whatever the hell comes out of my mouth at this point. But, I don't know what it is.
You turned it on. You're going to listen to it while you're doing whatever in the bathroom. And then you just dawns on you. Wait a minute. I don't speak Japanese.
I don't. I'm like, it's an audio drama. This is perfect. It should be so easy to catch up on. Hell, I might even be able to, like, scroll or, like, play a game or something. And I'm sitting there. I sit down. I'm like, all right. Oh. And it's too late at that point. So I just have to sit there and listen to my mistake.
You're just like, Nani.
That's my brain.
Nani, have I done?
Oh, my God. Oh. It's been quite an adventure.
So audio dramas. What are audio dramas? I'll run that down real quick, because this is something you find a lot in a lot of Japanese media, where audio dramas are pretty common. You can find them for anime, games, visual novels, spinoffs, sometimes like manga, who just like they've just never had voice acting before, but they'll do an audio drama that's just based on a manga. It's literally just audio drama. It would be like if you were listening to the radio in the 1950s and a show would come on. It's just, hey, here's all the characters doing a thing in a scene or multiple scenes or, you know, a story over the course of like an entire drama CD. Like there are entire just releases that are like, here's a drama CD. It's like 50 minutes of an audio drama. And these are sometimes like spin-off episodes or just side stories. Sometimes it's just fan service and fun for the fans and things like that. And sometimes, like with the case with Odd Taxi, it directly ties into the actual piece of media that it was created for. And the one for Odd Taxi isn't so tied into it that you need this audio drama to make sense of the story. Like, it's pretty compartmentalized. Like, if you removed Nagashima from the story completely in the anime, you wouldn't even know that there was an audio drama. Like, he feels like he's kind of just there to facilitate this being a thing.
That's true. That is very true. Because there is nothing there. That's like the one character that's just like,
yeah, he's just kind of like, when he shows up, it's there to kind of like, it's for the people that are listening along with the audio drama and keeping up with things. Like, aha! Hey, I know that.
I think it's a great tie-in, honestly.
It's a very cool thing that, like, when you look it up after the fact, I remember, like, looking it up after the fact because, like, it was just like, there's this little thing that keeps popping up in like, random episodes. And I was like, they gotta be showing that for a reason. And then it's like, oh, it's this whole damn audio drama that they did. They did, like, 13 episodes of it. Every one of them is, like, 3 to 10 minutes long. It's a little extra thing. A lot of them are kind of just adding a little extra spice to the story, a little extra color. But there's some that we are going to find out are very important to the story and shed some light on things. Some of the darker things that I may have mentioned when we were discussing the final episode. So what we'll do is we're going to go over each episode kind of just in a quick fashion, because again, each of them are pretty short. There's not a lot to them. The ones that are really substantial are the ones we'll kind of sit down here and dissect, but I'll kind of mostly go over kind of like a you know, a quick summary kind of thing for mm-hmm. other ones that are kind of more of just like a little self-contained fun thing. So, getting into what the Odd Taxi audio drama is, it is an in-universe podcast that is hosted by Giraffe Boy, Satoshi Nagashima. And he's a bit of a hobbyist tinkerer, and he has this specialized radio receiver that can pick up inner ear monitor signals from concerts where, you know, artists have IEMs in their ear while they're performing so that they can, you know, they have other band members in their ear instead of, like, you know, having to listen to them on stage, because that would just lead to all sorts of chaos in a lot of situations. But sometimes those signals can be intercepted, and this is how he listens to concerts that he would not normally be able to afford to go to. And while he's doing this, he starts to uncover audio that's being transmitted in real time from what sounds like a wiretap. And he gets, like, real curious about it and really into kind of, like, wanting to share what this is about. So this is sort of the premise of his in-universe podcast, where every week, you know, he checks into his little, you know, his little listening device to see, like, okay, like, what, you know, like what's been playing, and he's recording it all, and he's playing you, like, the more interesting, candid stuff that he gets for the week. And that's kind of the basis for his show. And every episode that he does. So that's like what every episode starts with, is kind of like the start of a podcast, and then you play the audio, and then whatever's recording gets cut off at the end, and then the next episode happens next week. What he is actually picking up are they're transmissions from a special ballpoint pen that is seen and passed around on screen a lot in this series. And when you start, like, seeing it in screenshots and stuff, you'd be like, yeah, like, I did see that. What was the point of showing me that?
This was a big one that hit me, too, because I remember seeing it, like, three times, maybe. I wasn't really paying too much attention, apparently.
Yeah, they show it, and they make a point to... A lot of the time, they make a point to, like, have it on a character or to kind of just be, like, hanging around in their vicinity. But it's usually the point that it's like, oh, that it's been with that character this whole time for a while. So it's just this little pink and white ballpoint pen. It's a lucky pen that when passed from, like, the point is, it's just like, oh, here's a lucky pen. If you take it and then you give it to somebody else, you get good luck. But it's actually a recording device that is transmitting its audio to whoever might be able to pick it up.
Such an odd thing to think about, like, if anyone pick it up, like.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to kind of just, like, like, at what point was this kind of, like, was this idea conceived, I wonder, and, like, you know, because obviously you've got to animate it into the show, so it was obviously done beforehand, but it's just like, wonder when that came up when they were kind of scoping the show out. It's a very cool idea, or if it was something that was maybe meant to be more in the show, but they couldn't, you know, obviously fit it all in due to runtime issues.
That might be it. Maybe the audio drama, or yeah, the audio was made specifically for that. Would they consider a tie-in beforehand as well?
Yeah, like it makes you wonder, like, where that all started in the first place, or was it something that kind of came up? It's like, wouldn't it be cool if we kind of did this to kind of, like, add these details that we can't quite work into the show because of runtime issues? So it's a very cool to think about how all that came about. So, the pen makes its first appearance in episode 1, and it's seen behind Tayako during the tavern scene. You can actually see it. It's on the little shelf that's behind her in front of, like, the little sake bottles. It's
clever.
Yeah, it's behind the glass. But off screen, we know that, and this is the thing, like, we are going to be tracing this pen's whereabouts through the entire series. Like, this is a whole thing. This is a whole little journey for this little pen, is that it is going to be passed around through various people, through various points in time. And it starts with Tayako passing it off screen to Dr. Gariki first.
Ooh.
So that's where it started. So that brings us to audio drama episode 1.3. So there is something to the way that these episodes are numbered as well. 1.3 indicates that this is the first episode of the audio drama, and that this also happened somewhere between episode 1 and 3 of the show. So that's what 1.3 means. So if it was like,
okay.
So if it was like 2.4, it would have happened somewhere between episodes 2 and 4. If it was like 13.13, it just happened in episode 13. So that's kind
I was
of how
curious about that.
That's okay. How the numbers are read. So they don't give it a definitive point in time in most of these. But you do kind of get a generalized idea of where in the series each one kind of takes place. So we start with episode 1.3, which takes place between episodes 1 and 3, somewhere in there. And the first conversation, this one takes place during one of Otakawa's doctor's appointments. This is a very silly conversation that they have, where we kind of find out, like, Otakawa's bachelor life is very fun. They talk about, like, very simple things, like frozen dinners and like, always having prepared food for when you're sick and washing dishes. But Gariki is just, like, he just doesn't relate to any of this at all, because him and his wife have a housekeeper.
It's so good.
And Otakawa is just like, you just don't get it. You don't get it. There's joy in these little things.
Yeah, he is the biggest stand for frozen food I have ever heard in my life.
Frozen food, and he stir fries everything.
Everything.
Well, it's just like, look, man, if you could throw it in a pan and throw some oil on it, it's great. So I imagine, like, him literally stir frying everything he eats. Which, again, that's such a you live by yourself, dude. Live your best life. You ain't got to impress nobody but yourself.
Absolutely. You eat what you like, you save what you have, and you're good to go. I like it. That's so Otakawa, to be honest.
It's so practical. Like, always having food in your freezer that's mm-hmm. frozen. Like, if you get sick, mm-hmm. all you gotta do is pop it out and either warm it up or nuke it, and you're good to go. Mm-hmm. You ain't gotta worry about it. Like, it's so smart. He's a practical walrus.
He is. He's a smart, practical walrus. Otakawa is very likable in his snark.
Yeah, he is. It's very fun kind of, like, and this is like what I mean. It's like, this is like a very fun little interaction with these two characters that you wouldn't get in the anime, but it's still written with that same, like, razor sharp wit, and the actors are really still into it. So it's not just like, you know, they're not just kind of like phoning it in. They're still clearly having fun with their characters.
Mm-hmm. I love these. These are great. If you watch it, I highly suggest you definitely watch or listen to these.
Yeah, these are on YouTube for free. The only ones you can't get are like 3.5 and I think episode 9, because they both contained copyrighted music that got them nuked. But we will be talking about them. I do know the content of them, so I will be going over them. But those are the only two that are not on there, unfortunately. And also in this episode, Gariki actually passes the ballpoint pen to Otakawa. So even though we see, but even though this pen is being shuffled around in between episodes, they always make it a point to either tell you how it happened or somewhere, or it will happen during the during one of the audio dramas. And here, Gariki passes the pen to Otakawa during this conversation. Mm-hmm. And this is where the whole lore of it comes about. It's a lucky ballpoint pen. If you keep it with you and you pass it to someone else, then you'll get good fortune. So, any other thoughts about the first one?
No, the first one is fun. And I think the second one's also really fun, to be honest. I love the silly ones. I really do.
There's a real good silly one later with Otakawa that's amazing.
Yeah, the first one is fun. It shows more of the relationship between Goriki and Odakawa overall.
Yeah.
And how they just were kind of just been buddies for such a long time. And this kind of shows more of their inner life, essentially, and kind of also kind of brings in Taeko's and her love of gossip, to be honest.
Oh, God, yeah, you can tell. Like, she's a gossip monger.
She's the perfect job because she knows what she likes.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out later. This is a girl that knows what she likes. So from there, the ballpoint pen is next seen in episode 2 of the anime. It is under Odakawa's sun visor while he's driving Homo sapiens around. So that's the next time we see it. And then in episode 5, Yamamoto is seen leaving Odakawa's taxi with the pen in the binder he's carrying. So that means, like, Odakawa likely passed it off to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then off-screen, Yamamoto passes the pen to Shiho Ichimura, who is a member of Mystery Kiss.
Which... Well, I feel like... I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
I feel like if Yamamoto passed... Or if Odakawa gave it to Yamamoto, then it has to be episode 5. It can't... Oh, I guess it does. It just says 2.5, doesn't it? Never mind.
Yeah.
I thought it was... Okay, never mind.
I get the confusion. I get the confusion because the pen is not heard from for a couple of episodes. And then it's just like, oh, and then in episode 5 is when Yamamoto ends up with it. So it just kind of hangs. It just kind of hangs out in Odakawa's car for a little bit. So that brings us to episode 2.5. And this is the first of the real big conversations. There are a number of real, and this is one I literally cannot believe. This is the second one that aired alongside episode 2 of the anime. I can't believe the gigantic balls they had to put this one specifically out.
That somebody had to. Wow!
It's, like, if you, that's confidence. That's confidence.
This is such a big episode.
All right, so episode 2.5, the second conversation, it starts as a conversation between Shiho and quote-unquote Yuki, who we know is Sakura Watagaki, and they're talking about how Rui is kind of a dick when she's criticizing people. Like, she'll always start her criticism with shit like, you know, this may be none of my business, but, or I don't want, I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but, you know, like, when somebody's saying something and they, yeah, like, no, you do want to be, it's like when somebody says, I don't want to be that guy. No, you do.
You
literally,
do.
You were born just to be that it. Guy. Just be that guy.
Be them. And stop taking it.
It's a cute little observation on Rui's character and how she's like, is literally trying to, like, be nice with her criticism, but it really just comes off as dickish. and it's at this point that it seems like Rui and Shiho probably not the biggest fans Shiho and Sakura are not the biggest fans of Yui. Things are not going great here, but then Rui enters the room. It's like, we need to be friends, though. Like, people like groups when they're closer together. So we need to organically, you know, make our relationship stronger, which, you know, that's how you organically make your relationship stronger, is you intentionally set out to do that.
What better? You set a date, you set a time, and you say, we're going to bond now.
Now we are going to bond. We will be best friends come September 27th.
Yes.
And that's going to be after we have watermelon together in August.
That's
going to be
scheduled
where
watermelon.
We're going to have scheduled watermelon, and we're going to talk and bond. And that'll be like when we start to realize we're really good friends. Anyway, that's how friends stuff. That's how friends work. You got to schedule all that. It's a fucking persona game, basically. But they eventually settle on a secret sharing game to form a bond, because what better way to bond with people than to just share your most personally deep secrets?
Also, like, You know, I'll just wait. just wait until we go through the answers first.
Okay. So the idea is, it's like, well, let's not, you know, just tell each other our secrets then. Let's write them all down anonymously. And it's just like, okay, we'll do one big secret that you take with you to the grave, and then a small secret and a lie. And then we'll mix them all up, and then we'll just read them aloud. And then everybody will know everything. And then we'll all be magically closer. And so that happens.
What a weird game.
It's very strange. It's just like,
also, like, why would you admit
any of this?
Any of these people. They are way too honest.
So, with three characters participating, we get 9 answers that are in the pile. And we'll go through them in order. The first is, I've had plastic surgery.
Fair enough.
The second, I badmouthed the group member on the internet.
Shady.
Three, I have a sugar daddy.
Okay.
Might be able to put a face to that one.
Yeah, no.
I'm doing couch casting.
Okay, hit the brakes.
Wait a minute. For those who are unsure of what couch casting may be, that is an exchange of sexual favors for advancement in a career. Again. This is all like, look, one big secret, one little secret, and a lie. Maybe it's a lie. Who knows?
It could be.
I've rationalized all of this out, and maybe we'll talk about a lot of that later. Okay. So we've got couch casting. That's as bad as it can get, right?
Sure.
Toad, could it possibly get worse?
I don't think so.
Can you think of anything at all that they would ever, that anybody could ever have in this pile that may be worse?
I would say Devil May Cry 2.
Oof! God. Oh my god.
Ooh. I think I got it there.
Oh yeah, that did it. I don't even know. I don't even know if the real one can live up to that one now. So the fifth one on the pile is, I killed somebody.
You just full stop admitting that. You're just going to full stop admit you killed somebody.
Why did you put that in there? Why would you do that?
Like, you can have other big lies. Like, I lied about, you know, and hurt somebody. You don't have to be like, oh, I murdered somebody. Like, what the fuck?
I wonder what the play here is. Is this just to, like, you know, oh, we're playing a silly game. Let's freak them out a little bit and gauge their reactions or something? Or we'll see, maybe. Moving on. I'm married.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that one.
Mm-hmm. I'm dating a comedian.
Well, you may know who that is.
Might have an idea there. This one's my personal favorite. Incense sticks.
Incense sticks. Like, what is
a secret you would take with you to the grave? It is common ritual in Japan to burn incense at someone's grave. A secret you will take to the grave.
I love it.
That's so good.
It really is.
I dumped a dead body.
Yeah, that's the last one.
Why would you do that? Why would you?
Why would you mention that? There are 3 of these that should obviously not be on here.
Absolutely. What are you people doing? Good Lord.
There's 3 lies, so maybe, you know.
Maybe, but we don't know. We don't know. Yeah. We just know that by the end of this, we're all closer together, and it's just like, well, let's all agree. Let's all agree to be on each other's good side from now on. It's like, yeah, well, when somebody says, I killed somebody, yeah, let's stay on each other's good side.
Yeah, let's be good. I dumped a dead body and I killed somebody in the same thing.
In the same damn pile of random shit. And again, I want to point out, like, all of this in hindsight is very funny because we have the entirety of the series as context now. But mm-hmm. I like getting this on week two. What is going through your head?
Yeah, I cannot. I can't put myself back in that state now. And the idea that they just threw all of it out there, if you somehow dug through this at episode two and figured some of this out, that would
that's
be incredible.
Crazy.
But like, it's all there. Like, the whole story is kind of
like
right there.
They put it all there. This is all stuff that if you were listening to the radio drama and you watch the later episodes, you see it all come together. Because you start finding out, because you do find out, oh, yes, Shiho has a sugar daddy because she's dating Kakihana. Rui is dating a comedian. Like, oh, shit, it's all coming out. So you can actually start putting it together in real time. It's very smart. But you also don't have to engage with it.
No, not
like,
at all.
That, again, it's no brilliant bearing, really. In that, like, all of this is here if you wanted that experience, but you're okay if you never had it.
I gotta say, it's really dark.
It is. It'll get darker, don't worry. But it's gonna be a while before we get there. So so after this, Shiho then passes the ball pen to Rui. Because Rui's just like, well, what's that pen? That's cool. And she's like, well, hey, I have to pass this off to somebody for good luck, so I'll let you have it. And that's the end of that episode. And then off screen, Rui gives the pen to Baba as a present. And then it ends up in Shibagaki's possession somehow. I have to imagine it's because, hey, you know, you're my bud. I'll give it to you. Which I think he actually mentions that, I think, because the next episode, 3.5, which is one of the first that's not on YouTube, so I'll kind of go over what it is this one is with Shibagaki, and he wakes up late on a day off. He's hungover because he was out drinking with young people, and it didn't go well for him.
It ain't going to.
And it ain't going to go much better either, because he turns his TV on, and there's Baba. He was having a grand old performance on the food show job that he got. Everybody's laughing, having a good time. And Shibagaki just spends like the next 3 minutes just dissecting and complaining that Baba's performance is bad. And he's just having a fit of jealousy. So he decides to call him. He calls him up and he's like, your appearance sucked. It was terrible. What are you doing? Those jokes aren't funny.
Oh my god. Wow, Shibagaki.
Shibagaki is so petty that he brings up a rumor that he had heard that like at the previous year's comedy tournament that Baba had congratulated one of the members of Bano Illumination for like having progressed in the tournament past them. He congratulated him, and then like Shibagaki explains it like, you should never wish success for anyone else in the same field as you.
God, you're such a jealous freaking prick.
Why is he so miserable?
Yeah, no, God.
So then the conversation eventually does turn around to Baba asking about the pen, and Shibagaki mentions that he has it, and he tells him that, you know, it was a present from his girlfriend, but he wants him to have it because he wants Shibagaki to start having the same kind of success that he's having. So that's why, like, when Rui gave him the pen, he gave it to him because he genuinely wants him to, you know, hey, I'm getting these jobs now. I want you to get them, too. That'd be awesome.
Very sweet gesture. Thank you, Baba.
Baba's too good for Shibagaki.
He's a sweetheart. He really is.
So Shibagaki says that even though he doesn't believe in superstition, that he'll pass it on to his superior at work, who's just a harmless idol fanboy.
Oh, just a harmless fanboy indeed.
Who is his superior? I don't think that ever came up in the anime that Shun is actually Shibagaki's superior at the club.
Yeah, because you see them both working there, but I don't know if it ever.
I don't know that they mentioned their positions, but Shun
that's
is his superior.
Because you think you hold him in such high regard because you hear him on the radio, because you think they're this like popular radio show. Mm-hmm. But it just turns out that he works under, like, Shun, for instance.
Yeah, he works under the kid that just wants to give idols a lot of money.
This show is so silly. I love
it. It's so great. It's so great. So, again, so this is where, off-screen, Shibagaki, he does mention that he's going to give it to Shun. So Shibagaki passes the pen to Shun Imai, and he ends up forgetting it in the back of... He ends up forgetting it in the back seat of Otakawa's cab in episode 6. You can kind of see it if you look at... I did provide a little screenshot, which that's going to play real well for people that are listening to this audio, obviously. But as Shun's in the back seat, you can see it, like, sort of hanging on his book... hanging on his book bag. Mm-hmm. His backpack a little bit.
It's very well hidden, but it's tiny in the dark.
It's so tiny, but he apparently loses it. He loses it during this exchange, and which brings us to episode 4.6.
Ooh.
And this one's fun. In this episode,
the best.
before he plays it this week, Nagashima starts to worry that, like, the battery in the pen might be running down at some point, so he needs to actually, like, listen to this more and find out where it's at. He needs to actually try and track down the taxi driver that has this pen. So that's, like, kind of an idea of where we're going next. But the transmission that he plays for episode 4.6 is just some candid Otakawa moments. It's just Otakawa driving around and observing.
It's so cute. It's Otakawa driving around for 3 minutes talking about how he wants to eat a beef bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And him commenting about the town and him getting upset. Him also almost hitting a bicyclist. Oh, it's so cute. I love this episode. It's only like 3 minutes.
It's just three minutes so of Otakawa being very silly while driving around and making all of these just small observations about the city. Oh, wonder what that's about.
Pure fluff.
Yeah, it's fluff, but it adds again, like, it's those little kind of down moments that you can't get in a story like this, because it has to keep going, it has to barrel forward, because it's a mystery and everybody wants to get to the end of it. But we get these little moments here where he's just driving, he's humming, he's singing some songs.
It's so cute. That's right. He sings a song. I love it.
I think he's singing a song about meeting a girl at a park.
Oh, I think you're right. And I like to talk about the audio thing real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The person who captioned it actually captions, like, a lot of background information about what's happening, which is really good.
Translator's notes are always awesome.
That's so good, and I just wanted to shout that out real quick.
Yeah. That's always cool. Like, you'll find that in a lot of anime sometimes, where something will come up, and, like, they couldn't find a smooth translation for it, so you'll get a translator's note telling you, like, what a thing is, and those are always cool and helpful. Like, that's always fun. I like it when those happen. Always kind of, like, to help you understand the culture a little more, things like that, or...
Yeah, it's quite a bit different. So part of the anime journey has honestly been learning about a lot about Japanese culture as well, and understanding, like, why the gun is so important here. We have guns in our buttholes.
Yeah, literally.
We have to have guns in our butthole. It's actually
mandated by the government. Actually,
by the government, that if you don't have at least a revolver in your butthole, you get thrown in jail.
I'm gonna write a song called "Revolver in Your Butthole" now.
I like that. Revolver in your butthole. Only 6 shots to go.
Only 6. That's gonna be like a hell of a way to milk one's prostate. I'll tell you that. Probably didn't expect to be talking about prostate milking in this episode, did you?
I gotta be honest, no.
Hmm?
However,
delighted.
I'm also not too surprised and delighted. Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing about my content, is sometimes prostate milking just comes up.
Oh.
See what I did there?
It is. She's on a roll right
also,
now.
Also, this episode is NSFW. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel it's pretty safe to. I think they should become a warning.
Yeah, right here is appropriate. About 48 minutes in.
48 minutes in. Hold on, we might not want to have it out loud.
But this is a great little episode. I like this one a lot. It's, again, just candid Odakawa. And the actor is just really good at making it sound very casual.
So good. Yeah. He makes Odakawa who Odakawa is, which is why I love the sub for this so much, because that is Odakawa.
Yeah, like, I think the dub actor does a very good job, but it does not hit the same. Like, it's just, there's just something about the way the Japanese actor plays him that is just so...
It's subtle.
There is a subtlety there that I can't quite put my finger on what he's doing, but there's something he's injecting into that character and the way that he vocalizes things that just kind of comes off as a little detached, but not like, you know, standoffish in a militant way or something. It's really interesting. But yeah, good episode there.
We talked about this like 3-minute episode longer than we talked about.
Longer than the episode is.
Yeah, that too.
Kind of like how, like, by the time we're finished with this podcast series, it'll be literally 2 times the size of the TV series. I think we'll have been podcasting for at least 13 hours, which the series is only 6, so.
That's incredible. Well, if you had the audio, it's almost 7.
There you go. All right. So, moving on to the next episode, we know the pen is still in the back of Odakawa's car somewhere, and Nagashima explains that he has successfully tracked down the taxi with the pen, and he was able to make a successful battery replacement. And the audio for this episode is just an exchange between Odakawa and Nagashima, while, like, you hear, like, Nagashima kind of digging around. He's kind of, like, half-checked out of the conversation. You know, like, Odakawa's just like, what is a high schooler doing taking a cab? Like, how can you afford this? What are you doing? And he's just kind of, I do stuff. And he's fiddling around the backseat trying to find the damn pen. But he eventually finds it, and then the audio cuts out. And then it cuts back in after he replaces the battery, and they're having a conversation about Homo sapiens history in the competitive comedy circuit. And this is a fun, like, again, we're adding more color to things, like what does this whole comedy competition thing mean? And they go over like how all of that is put together, how it's structured. And Nagashima's got a lot of thoughts on comedy, and he feels that like the success that they'd had in their competitions, it made their act dull because all of their material now is just like geared toward like trying to capture moments in a competition rather than trying to make something that's like organic and real and funny. They're just always trying to like make things like, oh, we're going to make this one specific audience laugh.
They didn't play off each other at all. They were just doing bits.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they did play off each other, it was actually funny, and they just never could figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. And it is because they had that success on the circuit, because like they started out and they were natural. They were just doing your typical two-man comedy scenario that was very popular in Japan. And when they started winning competitions, they started just kind of like trying to write everything for a competition audience and not, you know, an audience. And he also mentions that he's upset that Shibagaki like works a part-time job. He's like, no, he's so funny. He really looks up to Shibagaki.
He loves Shibagaki. It's adorable.
And Shibagaki ain't give no shits about him.
He does not want anything to do with him.
No. You're a young person, so that means you're dumb. You have no idea what comedy is. But it's very clear that Nagashima is very passionate about comedy. With the way that he's able to eloquently speak about it, the way he observes Homo sapiens act and like and just like, you know, their act is better when they're just being organic and being themselves. And he notices that, and that's really what he's pushing for a lot of the time. And I think that, like, it's a real cool conversation that, again, kind of like it gives more life to Nagashima's character, you know, beyond him just being this weirdo that's kind of spying on people. But that, like, yeah, like, no, this dude really does love comedy. Like, he talks about having been to a good number of comedy shows, especially for someone his age. So, you know, he's a bit of an affluent person when it comes to comedy. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, honestly, I thought him and Nagashima were actually going to team up at some point since they had similar ideas about comedy.
Yeah,
and
he looks
up so much to him, but since Nagashima is so fucking blinded by his own pride and stuff,
mm-hmm.
he can't understand, you know, can't understand. Why can my brain not grasp things?
What are words?
What are words?
Well, see, we put all the Japanese Shibagami. In your head, and it's starting to put out, it's starting to take out all the English words is what's happening.
I honestly think you're right. I think if I just sit there and listen to subbed anime mm-hmm. for, like, the next month, mm-hmm. I might just forget English and just start speaking Japanese.
Well, a really good method for learning Japanese, and this is one that I used back in, like, 2007, 2008, is immersion techniques, where literally, like they had a program called Keyhole TV, and I literally just always had Japanese TV on all day, so that I was listening to people speak normal Japanese in the way that people do conversationally, and not just from cartoons, because cartoons are overacted, and a lot of people go to Japan and try to talk like anime characters and sound real stupid in conversation.
And they get real annoyed by it, I'm absolutely certain.
I think more or less they know what's happening, and it's more of just like, hey, we know, they more or less get what you're doing here, and they know why, but it's more like, in my case, like, where I had taken that kind of immersion and kind of learned to speak the language and hear it better, like, when I have talked to actual Japanese people, like the Itamai at the Japanese restaurant I go to get my sushi, I will sometimes speak to him in Japanese, and, like, you can tell that he appreciates that, that you're mm-hmm. speaking authentically. But again, that's just kind of a brief aside there, as I wanted to mention, like, yeah, like, you mentioned, like, if you just sit down and listen to it a whole bunch, yeah, like, If you're studying the way you normally would and learning kanji and learning concepts and learning grammar, if you do immersion therapy where that you only listen to just strictly Japanese media all the time, and you, like, it really does work.
Yeah, no, I 100%, because I've messed around with it prior, because honestly, when I was back speedrunning NES a lot, I really was looking up kanji
Duolingo. Mm-hmm.
And I did it a little bit, and of course I don't remember anything now because it's really hard for my brain to remember these things. But
sure.
I played with it for a while, and I was like, okay, this doesn't seem too bad, but I'm not hearing it.
Yeah.
Besides, like, the part where it just says it, like, it slightly gives it to you. And I'm not really learning to read it that much either.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's not doing a whole lot. So, and as I think my German teacher said, like, the best way to just kind of learn a language is just, like, go to that country and listen to the people and, you know, listen to them. Just, like, kind of take that culture in, take that language in.
How do infants learn to speak?
True. That they just hear us talk all the time
and then
until they start.
Your brain starts putting it together. And that's really what happens when you do immersion techniques. It's like you're just kind of like, if that's all you're hearing all the time, you start noticing the patterns. You start noticing the way that, like, certain things are said, or like, okay, here's an interaction you will always hear. And it's like, oh, well, if you say this, then I say this. And that's just always going to be right because that's just the way people talk. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just thought that it was a fun little thing to kind of sidebar there with regards to learning Japanese and understanding Japanese language. But anyway, we'll get back to it here. So Nagashima, then he mentions that he found the pen in the backseat. He's like, hey, I know this pen. This pen belongs to Homo sapiens. And Oda Kowens is like, well, I guess I got to drop it off somewhere. Great.
Nakawa ever annoyed?
Is he never annoyed?
are ever annoyed. Sorry.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And then off screen, Odakawa delivers the pen to Homo Sapiens Agency, and then they hand it back off to Baba.
Right. Baba's got it again.
So Baba's got the pen again in episode 6.7, and this transmission is mostly, it's a very cute phone call.
This is so cute.
Between Baba and Rui, and they're just kind of like talking about their day-to-day, and there's this really cute exchange where they have like cute little names for one another. They're basically just little pet names for one another. Rui-tan is just like when you add Tan to a girl's name, it's just a really cute identifier. Like, so if you like, you know, you're playing Rika Simulator, you're like, oh, it's Rika-tan, you know, like, oh, it's just cute.
And so cute.
And Baba Nyan is kind of just like, oh, well, Nyan is the sound a cat makes. So again, it's just a cute little signifier. But they're just having this little moment. And then like, Rui kind of goes quiet. And she's very clearly like, very clearly upset. And you could tell that she's wanting to talk. We know what she wants to talk about. We know what's weighing her. We know what's weighing on her, but she can't bring herself to do it. And she just kind of like glosses past it. And she just brings it to talking about like, oh, the noodles that you're doing promo for. Well, I'll bet those are great, huh? And it's really sad. You can hear in her voice that she's just kind of like, despite the fact that Baba is like that sanctuary from it all, she still like, she doesn't like want to, I think that like, she doesn't want to destroy that. Like, this is the one place where she can be, where she can kind of be away from it. But if she told him about it, then that would be, so that's why I kind of think that she abstains from telling him about
it. I get that. Yeah, I get that.
It
that's
totally
her
makes
happy
sense.
Place.
Yeah. And she's very like, and as we deduce from the show, she actually is very much really in love with him. She really likes him.
Yeah, they were very sweet together. Yeah. He really won her with just being himself.
Yeah, like good
and
guy.
And it made her, better, honestly, because she had some, like, selfish tendencies, but, like, through the band and everything. Like, Rika, or not Rika, Jesus Christ, here we go. Here
got
we
Rika on the
go.
Brain! 5,700 fates come and go real fast, Toad.
6,000 now.
Oh, yeah. Taking a drink, I was not ready for 6,000.
Oh, Rui is really the most unfortunate character in this whole series. And hearing her being so sad in this call, just not being able to talk about it because she doesn't want to hurt Baba.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagining, because she's going to get, you know, the end where she gets arrested and stuff, so even if she gets off, like, that's so bad.
She, like it is really funny how we were like, oh, she's totally the shitter. Ooh,
oh, yeah.
She's totally
we
the
both.
Bad guy. I'm like, and then it's like, no, she's actually, like, the one that got the most fucked out of everybody.
Like, she's young, so it's understandable that she doesn't have everything put together yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she gets roped into something like that. Like, it's so bad.
It's so unfair because it feels like she is the one that's going to take the fall for this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really unfortunate. Really unfortunate. Yeah. Let's just hope that their investigation into Sakura pays off. Like, that's all we can hope for. We don't know. Like, again, that's where the fiction ends. You kind of just gotta hope in your brain that, like, she's exonerated and everything's good and she gets out and
make it a happy ending for yourself.
There
that's
you go.
How these things end.
There
I
you
like
go.
It. I like it.
So Baba then mentions that he's actually got the damn pen again that she gave him. And he's like, I think this damn thing's cursed. And she tells him to just throw it away, dude. Like, it ain't worth it if it's actually cursed. But he says he feels mm-hmm. like something bad would happen if he did that. And so Rui suggests just to drop it off at the Lost and Found at the police station then. Like the Lost and Found's going to give a shit about a pen. They don't even care about finding people in America.
Oh, yeah. They don't give a shit about anything. They would probably just...
They care
Take
about
it.
Property. They care about property. They care
oh,
a
yeah,
lot about property, especially if it's owned by rich people.
Mm-hmm. Tasty boots and rich property. It's a lifestyle.
Someone told me once, is like, your podcasts and streams have a lot of political commentary in them that make you very unpalatable to some people. And I'm just like, yeah, I know.
It's perfect. Fuck off.
Can't believe this, that the kind of people that come up in your DMs sometimes is real fucking funny, isn't it?
It's,
I'm sure you've gotten some of that too over the years, where you know you like, I've always been loud and I express myself just the same way I did just now about fuck the police. Mm-hmm. You know, and to have somebody come up in my DMs like, you know, you got a great VTuber model, it's cute, your streams are funny, but then you start talking about politics or downing cops or Black Lives Matter, and it's really unpalatable to some people. Like, well, it sounds like those aren't the people I want around. I don't give a shit.
This is the whole, this is why, oh my God, I'm going to get on a political rant. This
do
is
it.
Just why
do it,
centrism
fuck it. The last
is
poodle
just,
cast, we got to do it.
This is why I hate centrists. I think it's a bullshit position to take in the first place, because it doesn't mean anything. I don't think it means anything.
Just like having the wood up your ass, that's it. Just admit it. Just admit
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, one side is clearly fucking horrible. Like, the other side is not good, but clearly it's not horrible. Like, but what are you doing in the middle? What are you fucking doing in the middle? You're not doing anything. You're not helping at all. Oh, I like some of this and some of that. What do you like? What do you like about racism? And what do you fucking like about transphobia and homophobia and keeping the establishment the way it is while millions of people suffer? Like, what bleh, you know,
people,
like, what is there to like? I'm sorry, I just dislike it. It's obnoxious, annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've dealt with a lot of those people over the years. In fact, and one of the discords I was in, and it thankfully, to the Discord's credit, they cleaned that stuff up.
Good on
but
them. Good on them.
They were joking about the pronoun shit again.
Oh yeah,
like the same.
The one
fucking,
joke. The one joke they have.
The single goddamn joke they had, and I got really annoyed about it. And I'm like, this isn't the shit that passes as comedy, because it's not. You're not saying anything. You're just being an asshole.
Shibagaki's in there.
Shibagaki
would be one of those guys. Oh, pronouns.
Oh God, yeah. Shibagaki would be 100% the fucking hater of fucking pronouns. Fucking boomer ass comedian. Oh God. I've tried to watch some of that old comedy before, and like a lot of it just skews me the hell out.
God. I like one time. I just because I wanted to see, it's like, what is funny about Andrew Dice Clay?
My brain literally just went there right when you were saying
nothing.
What is funny.
There's literally nothing funny about. It's not funny at all.
God. He doesn't do anything.
There's no joke.
And says derogatory terms. That's his whole shtick.
You just say derogatory terms about people who are already having a bad time. Okay. Anyway, we have veered so far off. And so that's our commentary on Shibagaki, really. Episode 7.8 of the audio drama. The pen is now it is now in Big Daimon and Little Daimon's possession. This recording takes place during the Halloween episode. And this is, I believe it's retrieved by Little Daimon first, I think is how it's mentioned. And then he gives it to his brother. But this recording, this is during the Halloween episode when they're patrolling and they're kind of like, you know, up on their little scaffold and talking down to the people. Hey, you down there, blah, 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 blah. And they're, and in the anime, they're having a very similar discussion about justice and all of that kind of fun stuff. This one is more of a lighthearted conversation. It's more about Halloween and Little Daimon kind of pointing out that, like, they're like that adults are the ones that make Halloween shitty for kids and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. and Little Daimon also, like, he points out that Big Daimon can be a bit of a hypocrite because he criticizes other people for liking things that he doesn't, but then he goes and enjoys them later himself, you know. Right. Exonerates himself from being cringe.
Mm-hmm. Can't be cringe if you just don't like anything.
Yeah. But it's okay when he likes it. You know, it's fine when he likes it.
Yeah, it's not cringe anymore.
No. So then the conversation then turns back to Big Daimon. He's like, well, where'd you get that pen? And Little Daimon's just like, I don't know. It was just in-law's property. I was like filling out paperwork. I didn't have anything. So I just kind of took it. And Big Daimon's like, give me that. I'll ensure that it gets... I'll ensure that the proper paperwork gets filled out for this pen.
Yeah, this stolen pen.
The stolen pen that we're going to care so much about. And this is like in episode 7, this is where you see it in Big Daimon's pocket. I think that like one of the more prominent shots of the pen where I like really started noticing it was like just seeing it kind of there in his pocket.
I think I might have missed it in the scene, but after listening to the audio, I don't remember if it was the audio or the show, but Big Diamond just gets so upset. He says, you're annoying. The crowd's annoying.
You're annoying. The crowd's annoying.
I'm leaving.
Everybody's annoying.
Cracks me up. He's just done with it.
Big Diamond's kind of a mood in that moment, not going to lie.
Yeah, I was kind of with him a little bit.
I think that would probably be me in a very similar situation. So then off screen, Big Daimon just throws the damn pen away. He doesn't care. He just throws it away, which is, hey, that's a very cop thing to do. Here's this lost and found item. They're going to either steal it or they're going to throw it away. One or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Makes
and they
sense.
Did both in this case.
Yep. Little Daimon stole it. And then Big Daimon threw it away. So the pen is then retrieved by the unnamed daytime TV producer, which that's a character we didn't get a lot of.
Yeah, the unnamed one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this leads us to episode 8.8, which means that this happened in episode 8. At the beginning of this episode, this one is special because Nagashima kind of brings up the idea of, hey, wait a minute. Who planted this bug in the first place? Because he doesn't know where it started. We have a good idea of where it started now. But he doesn't know where it started, and he kind of posits that to his audience. Like, where did this thing get started if it's bouncing around between all these people? Someone had to have planted it for some reason. And that's when this next episode plays. And this one, in this episode, it actually makes – the pen makes its way back to Taiko's tavern. And this is a meeting with the producer, and this time is a conversation between this producer and Master Danraku, which somebody doesn't get a lot of play in the show itself.
I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
I did notice, actually, rewatching how early Danraku is in the show, and a little bit, quite a bit too, on the TV and stuff. Oh, and another little fun scene I just wanted to mention real quick.
Go ahead.
When Odakawa was talking about repaying his debts the first time to the monkey.
To Taper?
No, the monkey.
Right.
He's talking to, in the sauna, he's talking to old man monkey who dates Shiho.
Oh, Kakihana! Right.
Kakihana, thank you.
Yeah.
In that scene, he's like, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about paying back the people I owe. But if you look at the shot, it shows the black taper in the background when it says that.
Yeah, it's real good. That's one of those.
God damn.
That's one of those. One of those things that when you rewatch it, it's like, oh, you clever goose.
It's so good. You need to watch it again if you're watching it again. Just watch it again anyway.
Just watch it again. Just watch Odd Taxi a lot.
Just keep watching it.
Do that thing that kids do where they got like one video and then they watch that one videotape until it's worn out. I know that drives parents crazy. I know a number of parents who were driven crazy by a child who there was one movie they always wanted to watch, and that's all they wanted to watch. So they had to put it on all the time. Which I'm not gonna be too mean about that, because I think that sometimes that sparks from neurodivergence. So I'm not gonna be mean about that. But I think I do know a number of parents who've had to deal with that over the years.
I fully get that. And honestly, sometimes I put on the same thing I've watched a few times at night just to relax, you know, because it's kind of a comfortable thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I get that.
So this conversation centers mostly, Danraku is frustrated that younger people, and he's frustrated judging the N1 Comedy Grand Prix. And he's like, this is a conversation that does get mentioned in the anime, where it's like, yeah, he was in here, but he's just kind of mostly grumpy about, you know, having to be a judge for the N1 Grand Prix and stuff. And then he gets up to go to the restroom, and then Tayako comes over to the producer and asks, she knows that there's a fan. I know someone that's a fan that would really love to meet Danraku. And he's just like, you know, he's not going to meet anybody. It's probably not a great idea. And that she counters, it was like, well, you know, he was nice to me when he gave me his autograph. And he was just like, well, yeah, he was trying to fuck you. And like, Tayako's like, a word?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I love that Tayako is at every point, anytime horny comes up, she's into it.
She's the biggest mood in the series, maybe.
Yeah, maybe she is. But like I remember back in the episode where like Gariki's going over the pictures in his phone and trying to see like how Odakawa recognizes faces. So he covered, he put a blindfold on Shirakawa, and then like I remember Tayako seeing that and go, oh, hey, now what kind of kink we into here?
Yeah, that was her first response. He was just curious about what they were into.
So I love that somewhat older lady out here. Like, she looking to get some. I'm here
Hell
for
yeah.
it. Tayako
Hell
can get it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm here, Tayako.
But this is the moment where Tayako mentions that she loves gossip. And then she's just like, I'm going to give this guy my number. Shit, man. Let's do it.
Hell
and then,
yeah.
So the producer hands Tayako a pen to write her number down. And then she's like, where the hell did you get this? And the producer's like, dude, I just randomly found it in the trash and picked it up. And she tells him, like, hey, like, this is a rumor that, like, if you find a lucky ball pen like that and you give it to somebody, you know, good fortune comes your way. So then the producer passes the ball pen to Tayako.
Hey.
So off screen. And we find out that this one pass, where this pass happens in the next episode, which is episode 9.9, which is one of the removed episodes because that is an episode with another musical theme in it that was removed due to copyright issues. But off screen, Tayako then gives the pen to Yamamoto, who then gives the pen to Yano.
Oh, Yano.
Oh, it's our boy.
That was maybe the greatest introduction.
God, there's no, like, that, I don't know what I was expecting when that dude came on screen the first time, and I did not even realize for, like, the first 2 or 3 seconds that he was rapping, and it was just like, wait a minute, is he rapping to his ringtone?
Yeah, and the thing is, he just doesn't stop, like, the motherfucker just keeps going, it's
goes.
Like, oh, and Odakawa's response, of course.
What?
Is what we're all thinking. What?
What?
After all that, it's just like...
Great moments in Odd Taxi history. So episode 9, it's a comical little scene, and Yano is just freestyling a rap the whole time. He's talking about just being hungry. He's trying to find a place that he could order food from at 6 in the morning. And then, like, later in the song, he just starts getting, like, oddly mushy about his friendship with Sekiguchi.
Yeah.
And, like... he's, like, really bummed out that Sekiguchi got knocked out. And he just, like, he's like, you're my family, dude. I'm gonna show you the view from the top. It's just so weirdly sentimental from everything we know about Yano and what we saw of him throughout the series. But he's just like
the only moment, right?
This is the only moment of like interesting vulnerability where like Yano is actually like, oh, like he actually cares about Sekiguchi. This is actually very cute.
Yeah, it's like the only thing he does care about.
Yeah.
God, that and rapping, that makes the scene where he stops rapping all the more funny.
All the more funny, yeah. Yeah, the moment he stops.
I forgot about that.
Dude, you're not rapping! He's so surprised. I wonder if he's just like never heard Yano not rapping before. And like, he will not talk unless he is rapping.
Love Yano.
So he like and in his rap, he also is like, why the hell did Yamamoto give me this pen? I'm just gonna give it back to him. Like, I got no use for this shit. So off screen, Yano gives the pen back to Yamamoto, and then it's next seen on Yamamoto's desk in episode 10. As you can see.
Yeah, that's a big one, right?
That's
there.
Like, that's the one where she's like, oh, okay, that's very clearly a thing.
That's the hard pen again.
So episode 10, this is a conversation between Rui and Yamamoto. And Rui asks, like, hey, is everything going to be all right? And she doesn't specifically mention what's going on. But he tells her, you kind of need to be careful talking. Like, you never know when prying ears could be listening. It's just like, oh, you really saved yourself there. You did not know that pen was a transmitter, but you very almost clearly gave up something big. You shut her up real fast.
Yeah, seriously. You might as well just pick that thing and talk into it. That's so damn close to you.
So Yamamoto is then just like, well, have you had any luck getting closer to everybody in the group yet? Because he's still trying to get this thing shored up and believable, because obviously it's not believable because, you know, the whole Mitsuya Yuki incident. That's kind of a problem. Still trying to make these girls seem naturally, you know, fond of one another, and it just ain't working. And Rui mentions that they played a secret sharing game, but she just doesn't really feel like things are going anywhere. Like, she's making any progress at all with these two. The rest of the episode is very funny. Because it's Rui kind of generally wondering out loud. Like, and I can't help but think that it's like her really kind of feeling this way. If she'd have just like stayed a normal person and tried to live a normal life instead of being an idol, if like maybe things would be quite a bit different for her, which I would think so. Yeah.
Especially after meeting Baba, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, sure. I think that might like, but obviously, probably being an idol is what got her, because like Baba never would have made fun of her on a TV show if like she wasn't an idol. So he probably would never have noticed her, and she would never have had a reason to be mad at him. All comes in. It's all chance. It's all fate, baby. Just ask Rika.
Roll them dice. Roll them. Fucking nice.
And then like Yamamoto is just like, you are way too cutthroat, you are way too ambitious, you are way too much of a control freak to be able to handle an actual job. And she's just like, well, fine, we'll do a mock job interview. So he asks her to role play doing a real life job interview, and she literally fails just entering.
It was so bad.
Like, he makes one criticism as soon as she comes in, and she just immediately goes off. He's like, yep, you're not hired.
Oh my god. This was such a fun scene.
Yeah, it was really, really cute, because she's just so insistent. Dude, I would totally fucking boss the hell out of being in a normal job. I'd ace. I could charm the pants off any interviewer.
Oh, Rui. Her pride, much like, well, at least she loses her pride a bit.
Yeah.
At least the bad part of it, unlike Shigaki. But, like, it's so up there that she just can't think she's the best at everything.
Yeah. Like, it's
a bad attitude.
And it all comes from the insecurity she has from only feeling like her looks are her only talent. So I get where it comes from. You know, she's got to kind of have those airs about her, because if she doesn't, then, you know, people will see that maybe you're not as great as you think you are. So Rui then asks, she asks Yamamoto why he's got the ballpoint pen again. And he explains that he picked it up at a random tavern that he went to. He gave it to Yano, and then Yano gave it back to him. And then Rui's just like, well, I guess we'll just give it to the only Mystery Kiss member that hasn't had it yet.
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
So from that point, the pen goes from Yamamoto to Rui to quote-unquote Yuki Mitsuya, who we know is Sakura Wadagaki. So, and this is where we end up with 11-10. This is the episode. This is kind of where you're able to kind of put it all together. And I've kind of put my own version of this together, which we'll go over. And I'm pretty confident in it. But we'll go over it. So this episode begins innocently enough. With Shiho and quote unquote Miyuki, they're playing a game of rock paper scissors over what sushi that each of them are gonna get, you know, when they go to a meeting later, and it's a cute little thing. But then the conversation quickly turns to the secret sharing game that they played before, and she's like, "Hey, like, I'll tell you my secret if you tell me yours." And it's like, "No, well, you know, let's not get crazy here. Let's not go. Let's because one of us has a real big one." So, all
two,
right,
really?
I need to watch how I'm wording things now. Who's got a bigger one, Sakura or Shiho? So rather than revealing their secrets, they choose to reveal their lies instead. So, Shiho reveals that the lie that she told was incense sticks. And Yuki's just like, "That's so fucking dumb." Yeah. She's like, "I'm a bad liar."
Oh, Shiho.
And quote unquote, Yuki's lie is that she was married. So now I've done some putting it together, and this is what I think the scoreboard looks like in the secrets game. And you can tell me if you think anything's different. I will try to rationalize each one as we go. But I think okay, so we'll start with Rui. Rui's big secret is obviously I dumped a body.
Yes.
Rui's small secret is I'm dating a comedian.
Yes.
Rui's lie is that she's had plastic surgery.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, Shiho's big secret, I have a sugar daddy.
Yes.
Shiho's small secret, I've talked about a group member online, and my rationalization for this being her secret is that she is always seen on her phone. I think she's like a terminally online kid. So I think that makes sense for her being the one to have talked about a group member online.
Yeah, that actually lines up really well, yeah.
And her lie, obviously, incense sticks.
Incense sticks.
Yuki's big secret, which is Sakura Wadagaki. Sakura's big secret, obviously, I've killed someone.
I'm a fucking murderer.
She said that her lie was that she's married. That leaves her small secret being, I've done couch casting. So, if we take this back to the original audition for Mystery Kiss where she flunked out, she said that after she failed, she went back immediately to speak alone with Yamamoto. I don't think speaking was the only thing that happened.
Well, the only thing that came in her mouth, that's for sure.
Jesus fucking Christ. Holy shit. Usually I'm the one that gets people to do that. So I think I do remember mentioning that a lot of things about the way that real Yuki Mitsuya died struck me as odd. And the way that it happens, Rui shows up and sees it, Yamamoto immediately shows up, and he could easily be the one to pin it on her if he had to. I think that the plot, I think the plot that they hatched in when she went and did whatever she did with Yamamoto, and again, this happened over the course of 18 months.
Right.
I think that when she did what she did, they devised a plan, and I don't think that Yamamoto was directly involved in that he did anything, but he would create the opportunity for Sakura to do what she wanted to do. Like, you know, like, so you go to the agency at night, get jumped, get murdered, get out. Wait for somebody to come in, boom, you finger them, that's it. So that's what I think happened, is that I think Yamamoto was actually in on it. He wasn't directly involved in her murder, but I think that he allowed it to happen because of, I think that it was directly involved with Sakura doing the couch casting thing. So that's how I think the whole murder thing came together, and I think Yamamoto is way more involved now than he have come off in the anime. So that's
Yamamoto is enemy number one. Yeah. You're absolutely correct. Yamamoto is a disgusting individual.
Yeah, we remember that Sakura is also 16 at the time. So
yeah. So not only is she 16, she goes over there, kaboom.
Yep.
And now they're fucking. Well, they are fucking, and fucking. You kill poor Yuki. Like, Yuki gets.
God,
fucked over.
We're talking about Rui, like, having it bad. I mean, of course, Yuki got it bad.
she's
just
in
a girl.
The first scene of the show, though.
Yeah, she absolutely is. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. So yeah, that's my crazy theory on how it all comes together and how you tie the whole murder thing together, is I think that, like, couch casting is the small secret.
Yeah, I think that's the thing about these audio, like, there's a lot of fun stuff, but there's, like, the ultimate background info in here about...
This opened up my eye. This opened up the door for me. I was like, oh, that's how it all went down. Now, obviously, I think that that's something they probably couldn't have gone with in the anime, and maybe probably didn't have time, or maybe didn't kind of want to deal with that. And again, the story works completely fine without those details. But that's just kind of how I put it together. That's what I think happened. I'm not going to say that it's the definitive version, but I think that I've explained it well enough that I think that it makes sense.
Yeah, I think, it all lines up incredibly well, like, especially since they admit to what their lies are, the rest kind of comes together, and... Like, we already know Sakura will do anything.
Yep.
We know that chant from her mother.
Yeah, anything. Like, she says this over and over, that she would do anything to ensure her success.
Get a fucking pedophile to help her murder somebody and cover it up. That's the story. What a wild-ass show.
Yeah. It's just wild. Just little layers that you can find behind there if you go looking. So, moving forward then, they then realize that, like, when they tell each other their lies, that, like, oh, like, that really leaves a lot of weird stuff on the table. Huh, the hole killed somebody and dumped a dead body. That's weird.
Just something. It's a little something.
And then Sakura's just like, wow, that means Rui was telling the truth about one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Planting that little seed and... I mean, she's not necessarily wrong.
No. I mean, but she's obviously trying to create an implication here.
Of course.
So at this moment, Yuki receives a call from her mom and excuses herself. And her mom is apparently a listener to Nagashima's podcast, and she recognizes Sakura's voice. And she tells Sakura that she's been wiretapped somehow. And Yuki's just like, Sakura's just like, wait, what? You're sure that's my voice? And she's like, yeah, I definitely hear you saying things. So she assures her that she's going to be more careful in the future. And that's where that episode cuts off. And then at some point during the off-screen portion, Sakura then discards the pen under a vending machine at Shibuya Station, and Nagashima collects it after deducing its location. Which brings us
Nagashima.
Which brings us to episode 1211. This is the episode where Nagashima announces that the next broadcast that he does is going to be his last. He feels like this thing's kind of run its course. Because like this episode, like he's got the pen now and like all he got was just like just sounds from a station. Like there's nothing there. Like it's just sound. He deduced where it was and he tracked it down. And then so all this episode is this was a fancy way to, I think, just do a promotion for the Mystery Kiss song, Supernatural Love Phenomenon.
I like the song.
It's a fun little song. I like it.
Yeah. It's not like great, but it's a fun song.
It's a cute song. It's like exactly what you expect out of that like J-pop kind of idol-y stuff. And then episode 12, Nagashima's scene with the pen while he's watching the G1 Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the final episode of the audio drama, episode 1313. And the final episode of the audio drama, it begins in progress. So we just kind of, this one just kind of starts. And you're already in the middle of a scene. It takes place in Tayako's. It's in her tavern. They're having a little recovery party for Odakawa, and it's just this big raucous kind of little party. Everybody's drunk and loud. Kakihana and Shimagaki get into a very silly argument. and then at the end, Odakawa gives this very brief, awkward, and sincere thank you to everyone for being supportive of his recovery, and it's very nice.
And
everyone calls it a night and leaves. And this is where the recording stops. And this is where Nagashima starts talking mid-episode, and he explains that, you know, he went to the party because, you know, Homo sapiens were going to be there. But he also wanted to return the pen to its owner, the person who planted the bug in the first place.
Ooh.
He then reveals that it was Tayako who originally planted the bug by giving it to Dr. Gariki. And that's where it all began. Like, she just... It's a little gossip hound.
She is. She just wanted to eavesdrop.
She just wanted that info. She wanted them deets. And so, like, to close out the show, Nagashima's like, let's do a live interception. Let's see if the pen's still transmitting after he gave it back. And it is. And he tunes into in the middle of a phone conversation that Tayako is having with Odakawa. We can hear her side, obviously, but not his. And she admits that she purposefully gave the pen to Dr. Gariki to try and spy on Odakawa to suss out his involvement with the disappearance case. But she's kind of a big doofus because she had the pen and she was like, well, how do I pick up what it's sending? She didn't have a receiver.
How are you going to start one half of that without having the other half already covered?
See, you're just getting really excited about it, giving the pen to Gariki, and then like 11 o'clock at night, she's like into her comfy robes and everything, getting ready to chill and listen to some hot goss, and then it's like, wait a minute, how do I do it?
Probably looking at her phone trying to find
out. Yeah, like,
was
there an app? Like, what's a magic microphone app? And so while she's talking to Odakawa and they're wrapping up, a knock is heard at the door, and Tayako hangs up with Odakawa again, just like, hey, you know, again, I'm sorry I did that to you, brah. You know, like, and he's Odakawa. He's chill with everything. He's like, whatever. More than likely, anyway. So Tayako goes to answer the door because she thinks that, oh, you know, somebody probably forgot something at the party and they just need me to get it for him. When she opens the door, you hear an impact and followed by a thud. And then you start hearing footsteps. And Nagashima kind of starts freaking out at this point. It's like, wait, what's going on? What did I just hear? Did I just hear a murder?
Are you murdering?
What happened here? So So he hears footsteps and somebody kind of mumbling to themselves. They're walking around, getting closer to the pen. She's talking to herself, and it's Sakura Watagaki, and she's looking out for the pen, and she finally grabs it, and she speaks directly into the mic. It's just like, the person who's listening to this, you're next. I saw you get this pen from Shibuya Station, and then the whole thing cuts off.
Jesus.
So what's brilliant about this is that at the end of the TV series, Nagashima's fate is actually kind of left up in the air because he's never seen in human form.
That's true.
During that final episode, we don't actually see him. So for a while, it was just like, wait, did Sakura actually get to him? Did she actually murder him too?
She might have.
Because when she's walking and talking to her mom, she's just like, I only got one thing left to tie up, and I'm just looking for the taxi driver now. So it's just like, well, if that's all she had left, did she get Nagashima too?
Nagashima boomered himself out of existence.
But this is solved in the movie with the alternate ending, at the end credits, there is a scene where everybody's at the tavern and they're all like holding up drawings they had done of the animals that Odakawa had seen them all as, and he's in that scene. So he's not dead. But yeah, that was such a great way to end that. Her just grabbing the mic. You're next. Because she knows who it was because she had been staking out that place. She knew where she hid it and she watched for who grabbed it.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's so good.
I love it. Oh, my God, the show.
The show is so good. The fiction tied to it. Everything is so well put together. But that is the end of the audio drama. It kind of just leaves you hanging on that little note of did she or didn't she? Until the movie came out like a half a year later and they kind of answered that. But like it's again, like with the TV series having such a vague ending of like did she or didn't she? And then like leaving that also hanging in the air of, well, did she get Nagashima too? Like, I think that's just a fun little thing to have tied everything together, to have both kind of end. Both end on that moment of, wait, did Sakura just murder another person?
Are there two deaths? Dunno. Like, at the end of both, it's still a noir mystery.
Yeah,
at the end
it's
of
still
both.
A noir
it's so
mystery
fucking brilliant.
Both! It's so good!
It's fucking
so
brilliant.
Good. It's so good.
Oh my God.
Like this was a great little supplement to a great little TV series. It was just like
I think this is planned. Like the audio drama. Mm-hmm. Like it's so well put together. I had to think it was planned from the beginning.
Yeah.
In some way. Maybe I'm crazy, but it's just it ends the same way. It goes with the story so well. They put the ending of the show in the second friggin' episode.
In the second they answer everything in the second episode. Like, even, like, three or four episodes later, you can see it all being sussed out. And just, like, you could put it together. And I think that's such a fun way, like for people that wanted to follow the show like that, I think that's a fun thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not necessary, but, man, does it add a lot.
Absolutely. It's just fantastic. It's just one more reason Odd Taxi is an amazing piece of work. You know, I know that we've literally filleted this show now, going on over 13 hours.
Oh my God, it looks like a fucking blizzard in this room. Fucking
somebody blew up a jar of mayonnaise in this room.
Otakawanaise.
No! But with the end of the audio drama comes the end of a totally open anime discussion. I will say that we have been talking about maybe doing this again in the future with another show. Just kind of taking something and going in and then doing a book club style podcast around it. I don't have a date on that, or even if there's, you know, even if we do or whatever, you know, it's just, it is what it is. This came about naturally and I don't like forcing things to happen, but it's something that came up that I'm not against doing this again. I think that it could be fun if we find the right show, and
I agree. I would love it. This was one of the most fun things is got it's been it's got me into a whole new genre of entertainment and it's got me to actually come out a little bit more too. You know, I feel a lot more I don't know, there's a lot of people that I can talk to about this because there's so many people who are into the anime.
Yeah.
And it's like an emotional experience. I experienced it for the first time. And I get to just grow closer to people and just have a good time. And it's like, it's everything I like. So, Polly, this has come to an answer completely naturally, which is honestly amazing. And I can't thank you enough for this awesome poodle cast we put together here.
Well, thank you just as much, because this show doesn't exist if you don't, you know, go, yeah, maybe that is a good idea. Maybe I will try that out. Yeah,
sometimes you gotta take that leap.
Take the leap and see what happens. Like this has turned out to be better than I could have ever imagined. You know, the experience of doing the show, obviously doing a cool thing with a friend, but also just discovering this amazing piece of work. That I was never like that I had just not seen yet. Like the fact that the fact that you picked that out of everything, like this couldn't have happened more perfectly.
It's things aligned somehow.
Yeah.
And this happened.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was interesting. I think you mentioned something about it being the only show you hadn't seen, too.
Yeah, it was the only show on that list that I had not seen. So you had a 1 in 7 shot of hitting, like, that's pretty good odds. You should play the lottery sometime.
Have you seen our freaking streams?
Yeah, maybe not. Also, lottery tickets are going to be like $5 next year or some shit, so that's stupid.
God.
Remember when they were $1? Remember when you were they were $1?
$1 to have, you know, a chance at like some happy times because you could get a little more, you know, high score in your bank account. Yeah.
You ever win anything in a lottery?
I know my mother won some contests growing up, but like I don't think I ever won anything substantial in any kind of lottery.
Mm. So, I won $100 on a scratcher once.
Nice.
But my friend bought the scratcher, so I halved it with him.
Aw, that's sweet.
And I won a PS5 at a store grand opening that I don't use. I don't use it for anything.
You don't have any PS5 exclusives?
I have no interest in anything that is out on PS5. I just... AAA gaming ain't doing it for me, dude.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. I don't blame you one bit. It's all just kind of like the same thing.
Yeah, everything feels very samey to me. Like people watch these like their GamesCon and Summer Game Show, and I watch them, and I'm just like, dude, why does everything look and feel the same?
Is this our age talking?
It probably is. I'm always willing to cop to the fact that I am an old and curmudgeonly, and I just want to play like a very specific type of game these days that is not.
Yes.
Like, I don't care about new graphics. Like, I don't think graphics can get better than they are now. So what's the fucking point?
Like, graphics are good and great and everything, but just like it's always been, if the game isn't good in itself.
There you go.
It's just a lot of fireworks.
And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. I look at these games, and most of them, they don't really speak to me, so I'll just be over here. I'll play Hollow Knight. I'll play UFO 50. I'll read my boring visual novels. I'll play anime dungeon crawlers with cute characters.
That looked really good.
Mary Skelter's been very fun.
Yeah.
Well, Toad, we have arrived at the end of the ride. The meter has stopped.
Sadly.
And we gotta get out. But before we do, let the internet folks at home know where they can find you.
Well, this is the last one. I do stream every day on twitch.tv/toad22484. Honestly, if you just type that name in anywhere, you'll find my Twitter.
Yeah, like, it's everything.
Everything I'm attached to.
You got branding locked down.
figured the numbers, you know, it makes it unique in its own generic form.
Yeah, like whatever could those numbers mean? So such a weird set of numbers to just pick that out of nowhere.
Right?
Weird.
I mean, it's pretty sequential. 2, 2, 4, 8, 4. Right. Maybe it's
what
just
could it mean? What could it mean?
I don't know. Just 40 years of curiousness about that.
Yeah, I could think about that for 40 years, and I don't know that I would ever put it together. You can find me at twitch.tv / polyplushie. I'm everywhere as polyplushie these days. All one word, usually. I'm pretty sure that I don't have any that are underscores, because I think underscores are ugly.
Yeah, I try not to have any extra bits like that. Yeah. Just gets too hard to remember.
I don't have a hard time remembering. I just think aesthetically it looks like poop from a butt.
Well, I can't argue with that.
There you go.
You spread the cheeks, you get a flat line. That's what
happens.
Exactly.
Exactly. Sometimes it curls into a bracket, too. You know. All right, everybody. We will catch you next time. But until then, poodle.
Poodle.